It was springtime in Chicago, 1921, and the Western Unitarian Conference was well underway. John Dietrich, one of the first humanist ministers, had started a conversation with his colleagues, a conversation about God. It was a conversation that mushroomed, some would say exploded, into what is now known in our history as the humanist-theist controversy. John Dietrich had become a radical Unitarian minister after having been defrocked by the Reformed Protestant Church. In his heresy trial, he was found guilty of accepting the theory of evolution, eliminating the Apostles' Creed from worship, and for using secular readings. At the Chicago conference, Dietrich was accused of trying to do away with God. But not just any God. It was that ancient, all-controlling judge God that ended up at the center of this controversy. Had the controversy, or the conversation, that is, been open enough and big enough for a broader notion of the ultimate to occupy that center, the outcome could have been quite revolutionary. After 10 years of acrimonious debate, both sides just grew tired. Tired of the controversy, and they each conceded to the greater good of an already weakened denomination. The theists in this controversy predicted that the collapse of Unitarianism was right around the corner. The public will be confused, they said, by a fellowship preaching both atheism and a faith in God. Well, they were wrong. Today, atheists and theists and humanists and pagans all sit side by side in fellowship. But they don't speak easily to each other about religion or religious experiences. So this morning, I invite you into a conversation, the conversation that didn't happen in 1921, a conversation about God. Now, it might seem logical to you to start with the question that I asked the children earlier. Well, what is God? In other words, how do you define God? Some people may have seen an article in the Daily Press a couple of weeks ago. It reported that a Baylor University study had found that there are actually four different kinds of God that people believe in. Apparently, 85 to 90% of all Americans believe in God, but there are different kinds of God they believe in. So there's the authoritarian, judgmental God, there's the kind, benevolent God, the distant God who created the universe and then kind of walked away, and then the critical God who judges but from a distance. We could spend a lot of time talking about these different theisms, the typology of God, kind of like botanists defining and classifying all the different plants. It would be really interesting and very informative, but it wouldn't get us any closer to our ultimate concern. And I don't think it even makes sense to define, that is, put a limit on something that we call the infinite. Wouldn't it make more sense to start with a map of where we are than a map of where God is? The purpose of a definition, after all, is to help us to know God better. But if we have to have the definition first, we'll never get there. We won't move any closer. And that's what we're all about, actually, getting close. Getting close is why we're here, gathered in this community this morning. So rather than talking about God and starting with God, let's start with the human heart and ask, what is the nature of this longing for God? There is a universal and uniquely human hunger for the holy. We have a sense that there is something much grander than ourselves, something that we ultimately belong to, something that will bring us to the fullness of our being. We can comprehend our lack of wholeness because we all have disparate pieces and loose threads of our lives that we want to have integrated and reconciled. The poet Denise Levertov describes the way this longing feels to her. Something is very gently, invisibly, silently pulling at me. A thread, or a net of threads, finer than cobweb and as elastic. Was I born with this knot about my neck, a bridle? Not fear, but a stirring of wonder makes me catch my breath when I feel the tug of it, when I thought it had loosened itself and gone. In a room full of Unitarian Universalists, there could very well be 150 conversations about God. Some of those conversations are about the longing for an anchor, a boulder to cling onto, a stone to hold onto, a trusty rock. In a recent focus group for a Unitarian Universalist Association survey, a youth member said that he wished our faith would give him this kind of anchor. I sometimes get really scared, he admitted, about death and God and where I'm going to go, because I'm scared to death that there's nothing. And honestly, I'd rather believe in God and heaven and die believing that there's something than to die saying, I'm going nowhere. Sometimes I really wish I were Christian so I wouldn't be scared at night. My heart goes out to this young man and everyone who struggles with the decision to be part of a non-creedal faith that has more questions than answers. Letting go of that rock is not easy. It's like learning how to swim. At first, the water seems to be full of dangers. There are waves and rapids. But eventually, we learn to move with the motion of those waves and get used to the river's flow. Eventually, our bodies feel like they're part of the water. Now, we could, of course, write a creed and make up answers. It's perfectly within our power and authority to do so. We could carve the letters right here in the concrete on the floor, fencing in our beliefs and declaring our final answers. But what would that cost us? Instead of a rock to hold on to, might it not turn into a rock that holds us down? Some of the 150 conversations about God are conversations about disappointment and disillusionment. Many people have had terrible experiences with organized religion. Others have heard too many horrific things attributed to God. They saw atrocities committed in the name of God, so they turned away. Some couldn't even bear to hear the word. It is important to say no to notions of God that support injustice, intolerance, and hatred, or that relinquish human responsibility by passing it off to a divine power. Yet, in turning away from what such religions have done in the name of God, we risk diminishing the opportunities for spiritual connection, from even having a conversation about God. Must this be the only option? In 1907, a small funeral took place for a Florida railroad worker named Saul Solomon Thurman. Saul was a good man, but church just wasn't his thing. The local pastor refused to conduct his funeral because, in the language of that time, he died out of Christ. So the family found a traveling evangelist who was willing to preach the funeral. Among the mourners was Saul's 7-year-old son, Howard. He listened in astonishment as this evangelist preached his father into hell, telling everyone what happens to sinners like Saul. Howard vowed to himself that when he grew to be a man, he would never have anything to do with church. An experience like that would drive anyone from God. But this young boy was not cut off from his spiritual nature. Howard developed a very close relationship with nature, the natural world. Later he wrote, "The woods provided my rather lonely spirit with a sense of belonging." Nighttime also gave him a sense of companionship. It was a presence, an articulate climate, he said. I felt embraced, enveloped, held secure. When this little boy grew up, he abandoned his vows against the church. The Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman founded the first intentionally multiracial congregation in the country. He was a modern-day mystic and most widely known to be Martin Luther King's Jr.'s pastor. Dr. Thurman left the harsh, judgmental God of his youth, but managed to hang on to his connection with the holy. Some of the 150 conversations about God are conversations about experiences like the ones Howard Thurman had. They're conversations about closeness, about belonging, about moving toward wholeness. We have all had these experiences where the realities of the wholeness seemed as close as our own breathing. They have been extraordinary life and death moments, as well as mundane moments where the divine presence comes as a flash. Life-changing moments and ordinary moments of quiet love. What name do we give the object of this closeness? To what do we feel connected? Not everyone will use the word God, because that word is not a prerequisite for this feeling of close connection with something greater than ourselves. Pagan and earth-centered religions, religious humanism, Buddhism, all teach the value of this connection without using the word God. But some will use the word, despite the baggage it carries. People choose to use the word God because it is part of the vernacular of a very large human community. It allows us to have conversations with other religions. It allows us to be part of a conversation that has been going on since the beginning of history. Some of the 150 conversations about God are about whether there is anything beyond ourselves. Some people say they do not long for a connection to anything beyond themselves because there is nothing beyond. There is a religion of self-reliance and self-sufficiency. They express feelings of satisfaction with their lives. They live ethically, they work hard, they obey the rules and seek pleasure and satisfaction in the worldly rather than spiritual things. I have had many of the conversations that I've described with myself and with others. When I was a little girl, I knew exactly who God was. God was who my grandmother talked to every single day for what seemed to me hours at a time, sitting on her bed, eyes tightly shut, gesturing wildly to make her point. God resided somewhere up there, and he knew exactly what I was doing and what I was thinking. He listened to me when I was afraid and feeling lonely. He was the steadfast parent when my own mortal parents disappointed me. But then I grew up, and I set aside that God, along with my Barbie dolls and my Nancy Drew books. I turned my attention to grown-up things, like the world of work. I found comfort in the material world, in my career and my friends, in my own achievements and pleasure. I had little need or interest in religion. And yet, there was something stirring somewhere in my heart. The first full-time job I ever had was at an insurance agency in Baltimore. I was 21, just turned 21, just out of school and on my own. On the outside, everything was fine, better than fine. I was right on track with my life. My morning commute used to take me into the city along this serpentine elevated highway called the Jones Falls Expressway. Sometimes, while driving on this road, I would imagine what it would be like to just drive off one of those curves right into the air. Now, it wasn't that I wanted to end my life, but I wanted to know whether at that moment in the air, I would finally feel something. My life felt so flat, and I wanted to know if at that moment I would finally feel something akin to really being alive. I used to have this little quote by Peter Matheson taped in my journal. One turns in all directions and sees nothing. And yet one senses that there is a source for this deep restlessness. And the path that leads there is not a path to a strange place, but the path home. So I started searching for that home. I had different jobs, different cities, different relationships. I even left the country. I went back home to Korea because I thought that's the home that I was longing for. I spent a year studying Zen Buddhism, and it was there, ironically in the midst of a non-theistic practice, that I started to find my way to God. And it was from there that I sent in my application to seminary. When I arrived at Star King School for the Ministry the following fall, I found God everywhere there. They call it Holy Hill, where the school is. I found God defined in every imaginable way, given every imaginable name. I mounded up a great deal of knowledge about God. And yet, I had no relationship. I did not feel a closeness. When I asked my advisor about this, she looked at me. I think she had heard this question many, many times in her career. And she said, "It sounds like you're looking for the God of your childhood. You're not going to find him, and I doubt that you really want to." You need to find the God that is present in your life right now, in the relationships you have with other people and the relationship you have with yourself. Ever since then, I've been trying to follow that advice by engaging in conversations about God. Now I know what Goethe meant when he described conversation as more splendid than gold and more refreshing than light. Conversation is what brings me close. Interactions with you make that happen. Because when I listen to other people's experiences, it shapes my understanding of the ultimate concern. And I cannot make this journey by myself. I need the companionship of others who seek closeness. You know, the valuable conversations about God are not about defining what God is or isn't. They're not about debating whether God is or isn't. The valuable conversations about God are about closeness. And isn't that why we're here this morning, gathered in this community? May we grow ever closer. Amen.